Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal. I'm joined by longtime football and basketball beat reporter Jim Polzin. Kind of a weird last few days, Jim. It seems like right after we stopped recording last week, lots of news happened and multiple games got in for the basketball team. So just kind of a interesting 5-6 days for both these programs.
Yeah, your football beat really never ends, does it?
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, I think after this signing day and after all this stuff that we're going to get into today, I think it'll be calm until spring practices start. But yeah, it's a little weird how there's always something going on until like July, I guess. But, you know, with all that being said, a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to start with basketball, kind of the stretch run of the season coming up here. They split two games over the last 4 days or 5 days with Penn State, losing on the road on Saturday, but then bounced back at home yesterday, the 72-56 win. At the Kohl Center. But the thing is, the schedule is about to get really hard. You know, we've been talking about all year how the Big Ten is going to be a gauntlet of a conference season, and the Badgers are about to step into the hardest part of it with how their schedule kind of got backloaded. So we're going to talk about that stretch coming up for UW. The road game coming up on Saturday against Illinois, preview the Illini a little bit. They're one of the teams that's ahead of the Badgers in the conference standings right now. So really important game for the Badgers in that sense. And then we got some football stuff to talk about. Like we mentioned, Jim Leonard, the Badgers defensive coordinator, he's going to be interviewing with the Packers for their defensive coordinator job. We got National Signing Day today, Wednesday, as we record this. So lots of stuff to get into. Pack show. And we're going to get into all of that right after this. All right, Jim, let's jump into these Penn State games. As I mentioned off the top, 1-1 in those two games against a not great team, so kind of disappointing that you weren't able to get both wins there if you're the Badgers. Let's just kind of look at the differences between the two games, because I think right off the bat, just the way that the Badgers played energy intensity-wise on Tuesday was kind of an indication that they knew that was their big issue on Saturday.
Yeah, that's the word, intensity, I think, urgency. They just, you know, there seemed to be a little bit more hustle, a little bit more aggressiveness. Everything was just a step better. I just thought they were more sound defensively too. They, you know, they, one big problem Saturday was transition points. They held Penn State to zero fast break points Tuesday night. And part of that, you know, part of that, you say, well, that's better defense, but it's also better offense. They're taking better shots. Even though they had a lot of turnovers, a lot of those were, you know, not live ball turnovers, traveling where the clock stops and you can get back and set your defense. And I think that was the biggest key, is they set their defense. And, you know, like I could say this almost every game, whether I'm talking about Wisconsin or the opponent, it really matters whether shots go in. And I thought Penn State had some shots that looked about the same to me as they did Saturday. And this time they just didn't go in. So that makes a difference. And in the second half, I thought, again, one of the better second half, or one of the better halves we've seen from Wisconsin, where they were really doing it on both ends of the court. And it turned
And I totally agree. And the thing that about that second half, you mentioned it with the live ball turnovers, that was really hurting them in the first half, because it led to a couple of lead outs, a couple of easier baskets for Penn State on Tuesday. But then in the second half, they cleaned that up. And then that's when they went on their run, you know, and they were taking care of the ball, moving it well on offense. It was what you expect from this team. And it's just weird, Jim, that it seemed like every time we talk, it's, you see this team play how you think they could play for a whole game, but just in stretches, right? It's just, they haven't been able to find that, I don't know if it's focus or discipline to be able to stretch those periods of playing well over a whole game, as opposed to, you know, chunks of a half or just a half. It's just kind of weird to see the inconsistencies in a game, not just game to game, but in a game from this team.
Yeah. And, you know, people have been asking about that a lot lately. And, you know, I wrote last week that the big difference is three-point shooting. Comparing the last 8 games last year to the first, at the time, it was the first 9 games of the Big Ten play this year, and the three-point shooting numbers are down. I think if you want to simplify it even more, and I told somebody this on Twitter, that 8-game stretch last year, everybody in the rotation was playing well. Not great, but you couldn't look at anybody and say they were playing poorly during that stretch.
Right.
now you can do that almost every night where you have maybe two or three guys who play well, but you don't have all eight. And this team needs it. This team is not, there's not enough NBA talent. There's no alpha dog. There's no, you know, there's no all Big Ten first team guy that you can count on. You really need the group as a whole to play well, and all individually. And you just haven't had that consistently this year. At times it does happen, but it hasn't happened consistently enough. And, you know, I guess as they did last year, they could completely prove us wrong and do it down the stretch this year, but just keep waiting and waiting for that to happen.
Yeah. And it was kind of a weird thing. And maybe this is just one of those situations where it's an oddity of the COVID affected schedule where they played back to back, but these guys played Saturday. It was one style of game. Then come to Tuesday night, I don't know if maybe the coaches got in the refs here or the league kind of got in the refs here, but it's very physical. Let a lot of things go on Saturday. And then Tuesday, it seemed like there was kind of an emphasis of tightening the game up a little bit from the refs.
Badger fans would have you believe that this is a Bo Borowski problem. His record is not good when he's in the crew, and he was on Saturday. I honestly watched that game over again on Saturday. Obviously I didn't go through and chart who was calling the fouls. So before I comment on, I didn't think Borowski was that bad on Saturday. I didn't think officiating was the reason they lost that game. I'll say that. But it was interesting to me. You know, I want to say Penn State's first foul in the game on Saturday wasn't until like the 6 minute mark of the first half. They had 10 by halftime last night, and they're a team that you can call a lot of fouls on because they're constantly reaching and, yeah, you know, and grabbing. They're a very aggressive defense. And that's part of the reason why they, if they're not leading the Big Ten in steals, they're number two. They're really high because they're aggressive and they're okay with, you know, being a little reachy. So, but it's always interesting to see how different games are called. And then this one was particularly interesting because you had the same two teams within a span of 4 days, and Wisconsin, to its credit, was aggressive. You know, like Trevor Anderson, I can think of, he split a double team and got to the basket. Other guys went to the basket and they got to the line. That was, they had 11 free throw attempts by halftime. That was big.
Yeah. And it's funny. We've talked about on this podcast about how there's not a ton of guys on this team that can put on the floor consistently and get you a layup, but it can get you fouls. You know, I think that was a thing that really swung the game and got Penn State's guards out of rhythm last night was, I think, what was it, last 4 minutes of the first half, their two starting guards had two fouls each. So they were out of the game. And they held in, and I think Wisconsin was, they were behind by halftime or up by one?
Up by two. Davidson hit a three-pointer, and they're up by two, yeah.
Right, yeah, but I forgot about that, sorry. So it was a close game, but I think that really knocked Penn State out of their rhythm because they just couldn't kind of get the Jets going again in the second half. And that was, I think, a product of the fact that Wisconsin said, all right, this is how it's getting called. Let's get to the line. And we've talked before about how this team is such a good free throw shooting team. They just don't get to the line enough and take advantage of it. And they really did last night. And we're going to talk about this, you know, tough stretch coming up in a little bit here. But that's, to me, the key is you've got to create those chances for yourselves for those free points, because they have an advantage over a lot of these teams that they're going to play, that they are such a good free throw shooting team 1 through 5. But just in some of their losses, especially, they haven't made that that advantage come onto the floor.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can't go into a game saying we want this X amount of free throw attempts, X amount of three-point attempts. You know, you just can't do it that way. You know, I think Greg Gard tells them every game, let's touch the post and you know, let's do it that way. But the thing I liked about last night when it was all said and done, they took 18 three-pointers, which to me seems like a manageable number, right? And they made half of them. They took 34 two-point shots, and a lot of those were, you know, closer to the rim. And then they ended up getting 16 free throw attempts. Not as many free throw attempts in the second half, but I thought they set the tone in the first half. So that to me is kind of the distribution you want. I mean, they've had a couple games where they've shot almost 33 pointers, and some of that's because late in the game you're chucking some to catch up. But it just seems at times they get a little too three-point happy, and you'd like to see the ball, you know, get in the paint, get some more paint touches and go inside out.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think maybe that's them trying to kickstart the way that they did last year in that late run that won in the conference. That they were making a lot of those outside shots, and you wrote about that last week. And maybe it's just kind of thinking we've got to keep shooting so that eventually it starts coming around for us, because outside of, I mean, Trice a little bit, but in Potter, I think it's been a disappointing shooting year for most of these guys. So I think maybe the idea is let's try to get in a rhythm some way here. But I think that's got to come through the flow of the offense. You can't force those. And that is a problem that you've kind of illustrated in the past of the team will kind of settle for them because they're a little bit open as opposed to working it around, getting inside out, and getting a wide open shot.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of these games where I go back and chart these three-pointers, and they are wide open. So, like, part of me is like, yeah, you can't pass that up. I mean, I don't care if it's 10 seconds into the shot clock. I'm not sure you're going to get another better look at possession. So I understand why they're doing it. But like I said, I thought the balance was a little bit better. I thought the attack mode yesterday was a little bit better just in terms of, you know, going right at the defense. And if it's not there, you know, then kick it back out or try something different. But I thought the attacking was different. You know, you mentioned Potter and Trice being the three-point, the guys that are shooting it well from outside. I'd throw Davison in that mix. However, Davison's numbers are weird this year. He's shooting 38.5% from three-point range, which, you know, you'll take that, right? All the time.
Right.
He's now down to 24.6% on two-point shots. I mean, he's shooting a full 14 percentage points better on threes than he is twos. He's driving to the rim and not getting, not finishing. You know, it's, I think he thinks he's drawing contact and not getting any calls, and that very well maybe the case, but it's not working. He's got a turnaround jumper in the paint that he has been good at in the past, but that's not falling. It's been crazy, especially the last 10 games or so, how little production he's got from two-point range.
That is insane to think that only a quarter of his shots are going in from inside the arc, especially with the guy that, as you mentioned, he'll attack. He's one of those guys, as we kind of talked about it. He'll go to the rim. It just hasn't been as effective. And I think there's a little bit with him, and we've talked about it in the past before, though, that he's not going to get a lot of benefit of the doubt, just his style. He's always trying to draw contact both ends of the floor. So I think when you foul him on a shot, it's got to be pretty drastic to get the whistle sometimes.
It was funny to me last night. So he took a charge, or he – the ref called an offensive foul on the Illinois player, on the Penn State player, excuse me. And I didn't think it was a charge at all. I thought it was.
I know what you're talking about. I was like, wow, I can't believe he got that one.
And then the next one, he comes back and I thought did a better job in that case. And he doesn't. And you knew he wasn't going to get the call. There's zero chance he's going to get that call. But again, that's a tough call to make. You know, I don't want to bag on officials too much because that's a bang, bang play. But I thought the first one was an obvious block. And it was handled the other way around. And
yeah, I completely agree. It was in the first half, I believe. They completely flipped it too.
Yeah. They're both in the first half. I mean, within, I think, a couple minutes of each other.
Exactly, yeah. And then talking about the three-point shooting, to stick on that for a second, kind of an emergence last night for Jonathan Davis, making four threes. Three-point shooting has never been a strength of his coming in, like, throughout his career. It's something that he still needs to develop. But the fact that he is taking these shots with no hesitation. It's not like he's having to be goaded into doing it. I think that's huge because eventually with the coaching that he's getting and the work that he puts in, it's going to come around a little bit more. And I think that's that last step to him. Cause you see all the things that you like about him, the athleticism, the defense, got to work on the turnovers a little bit. It had some tough moments last night, but the lack of hesitancy he has to shoot is just going to make him even more of a threat offensively and make it even harder for defenses to get to put somebody on him.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just so important for that first one to go in, you know, like some of these games and I, you know, I talked to Tyler Wall a little bit about this last year leading into this year about his 3-point performance last year in that if you only shoot one, maybe two a game, it's just hard to get in a rhythm. Right. I mean, most guys, if they miss a couple, they're not going to hesitate to shoot another one. I think some of these younger guys, if they miss one, you know, they're going to hesitate the next time. So I thought it was really important for Johnny to get his first one to get that knocked down. And then he got hot in the second half. And what I liked a lot about it was guys making the extra pass to get him that look in the right corner. And then him not hesitating to shoot it. He had a couple of really good looks. So if they can even get him to the point this year where it's, you know, more consistent from 3-point range. Yeah. That makes you so much more dominant because then guys are going to have to close out harder, which gives him the ability to drive and create that way. It just adds so much to his game. And then I think the final step is he's got to get a little bit better from free throw line, because he's going to get there a lot in his career. And if he can start knocking down those at a 70% clip or so, that's even more important.
Yeah, that's got to be a mental thing, because he hasn't he has good form and everything. And yeah, you saw it for streaks, even in his high school career, that just for whatever reason, the ball wouldn't go in. Just something would be up with his shot and be a little bit long, a little short. So I think there's just got to be maybe something going on where he's thinking about it a little bit too much when he's at the line.
Well, and I think that's a good point. I mean, like, you know, back when guys like Ethan Happ and Ryan Evans were having problems at the free throw line and you know, fans were all over them. You have to remember, yes, it's called the easiest shot in the world, right? But it's the only one where you're sitting there thinking about it beforehand. When you're taking jumpers in the game, it's reaction. Free throw line, you usually have 5-10 seconds beforehand to think. And sometimes that for some players can be a little too much time, and they get in their head a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So let's kind of move the looking glass forward here. Panthers are 14-5, 8-4 in the conference right now, tied for third in the league. The final eight games of the regular season, they've got six games against opponents that are currently ranked, two of them against Illinois, one the first one coming up on Saturday, two of them coming up against Iowa, then Michigan and Purdue. I think this is the defining run. I mean, expecting another 8-0 run to close out the year is pretty unrealistic, but this is going to be the defining run where you start thinking, okay, what is this Badger team this season? What can we really expect from them in a postseason, however that's going to look? And I guess it seems like this team's just so up and down. Where do you think this team sits at right now, knowing that this stretch is going to be so important for them?
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing is, whatever happened in the past, there's still so much in front of them, right? I mean, you look at the stretch as a tough stretch, and that's true. It can also be looked at the other way as an opportunity. You've got plenty of opportunities to get resume building wins down the stretch. Now, have they shown enough consistency where you're confident saying they're going to do that? No, but you know, it's there. You see it in spurts, and you know, it's there and bottled up. And this team's been talking all season long about how, you know, March is important to them and stuff like that. So it's a veteran group. I think it's really good at bouncing back from, you know, from adversity. So we'll see down the stretch. I don't know. Like, what do you think is a realistic closing run in these eight games? I mean, 4-4 wouldn't be a, 4-4 wouldn't be a bad stretch considering the eight games they have to play. 5-3 would be pretty good. I don't even know. Like, it's so hard to predict this team game to game that I don't know what to expect on this down the stretch.
Yeah, I should have mentioned the games that are against not ranked opponents are against Northwestern and Nebraska. So you got to chalk those up to wins. Like, if you're going to
be on the road, right. I mean, like, yeah, I hate to chalk up any guaranteed victories in this league, but you have to win those two. Right. I mean,
yeah,
it goes without saying.
So you start with that as your base. I actually think they match up with Iowa pretty well this year. I know Iowa can score, you know, with the elites of this country, and so there's something about them is weird. They lost two of their last three, one against Indiana, which was pretty embarrassing. I know they shot horrendously that game, but that was kind of an outlier from them shooting wise. But I just think that the way that Wisconsin plays defense when they're playing well, they defend the 3-point line pretty well, and that's really where Iowa does a lot of its damage. It's expecting you to collapse on Garza inside, and then guys are wide open on the perimeter. We know Micah Potter is not an elite inside defender, but at least he's a big body, and then they have Nate Reavers behind him as well. I think that they're going to be able to do enough against Garza where expecting to stop him from scoring, you know, 20, 25 points is kind of ridiculous. Like, if you're focused on that, that's when you're going to hurt yourself. But making sure that he has to take a lot of shots, has to work really hard on the other end to get those 25, I think that's a good matchup for Wisconsin. I think they're going to be able to win one of those games. And then I also think that Purdue is kind of the same way. I think those are four wins that you can kind of think are pretty realistic. I don't know if they can sweep Iowa to get to five, but the thing is, these Illinois matchups are about to start, and then the Michigan game, I just can't see them winning. So I think on the optimistic side, 5-3 would be what you would, if you were kind of just scheduling it out, 5-3 would be pretty ideal in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you, which would put them at 13-7 in the Big Ten, which, you know, not going to be enough to win the league again, but probably will put you in that third or fourth place range. And, you know, is a decent season in the grand scheme of things. You're going to look back at this season with regret. Obviously, you know, they're 8-4 right now. They really should be 10-2. I mean, I still that Penn State game on Saturday is a game that, you know, you have to win if you're going to be a title contender. I still think you got to beat Maryland at home back in December too. So if you're 10-2 and 15-3 right now, I just think it's a completely different outlook than, you know, 13-5, 8-4. So yeah, I mean, I think you're probably right. I think there's a chance to get 5 wins. The Michigan game at home, I think the one thing you have going for them there is that Michigan's been on a pause. I just don't know how they're going to come out of this. You know, I'm anxious to see a team that's been on pause. You know, are they going to be clicking the way they were when they went on pause? So there's a chance in that home game, I think. And frankly, Wisconsin, again, I've written about this. They're good. They're better the second time around. And there was plenty to learn from that game in Ann Arbor. Right. So maybe they can pull that one out. Anything beyond 5-3 is really hard to imagine, though.
Yeah, and I saw a tweet right before we started recording that they don't know if Michigan's going to be able to come off their pods. They might continue their pause for a week. And so who even knows if that game gets played? But, yeah, Michigan's going to have a wild stretch down in February and early March. So maybe that plays into the Badgers' advantage. Like, they're coming off a second game in 3 days, something like that, if Michigan tries to make all these up. But I think you're right. Just the way that this team has been inconsistent, expecting them to catch fire from three and to be able to play defense at their highest level consistently, is just hard to see when you've got about 20 games of evidence that they don't bring those to stretches together for very long.
My crystal ball told you they were going to shoot 41% from 3-point range over these last 8 games.
To me, it would say I think they're beating Iowa twice if that was the case. If they're making threes at that clip, I'm just down on Iowa this year. I know they're good. I'm not saying they're not a good team, and I think they're going to be a tough team in the play in the tournament because of a guy like Garza and the shooters they have. But I just don't like the fact that they had all offseason know, like, hey, we're playing defense away from being a national championship contender, and they don't do it still. I don't know if it's just they don't have the athletes or the discipline to do it. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I think it's personnel to some degree. I don't think Garza is a really good, you know, he's not a good defender. Jordan Bohannon is not a good defender at all. Right. So I think sometimes it comes down to personnel. I still think they're so lethal offensively, though, that they can outscore teams. Somebody put this on Twitter last night. It's hard to imagine them making a run to the Final Four or a national championship for that matter, because at some point their defense is going to let them down, right? Yeah. Kind of like, look at Wisconsin. At some point, it's 3-point shooting is going to let it down, right, over the course of 3 or 4 games. So it's hard to imagine those teams making run, which is why I think big picture, I think Michigan and Illinois are the two teams that I think have the best chance of making a deep run in March in this conference.
All right, Jim, you mentioned Illinois, so let's start looking at them a little bit. Had their struggles at points in this season, but it seems like they're starting to figure it out. They just beat Iowa. I think it was last week, or maybe was that Saturday also?
Friday night.
So obviously this team has two of the premier players in this conference, Io Sunmu, thank you, Jim, and Kofi Coburn, two of the best players in the conference, all Big Ten players, possibly first teamers. But you made a note of this in our rundown here, that you think the emergence of Trent Frazier as a consistent third option and, you know, just another guy that they can rely on is kind of set them apart from where they were last year.
Yeah. And he's played for 4 years. I think he started for 4 years, but he has struggled at various points in his career. And I've watched Illinois a couple times this year, especially lately. He seems to be, something has clicked. He's getting that senior year final push. I thought he played really well against Iowa. I think he had 24 that night. He had 19 last night against Indiana. So he's stringing together some really good play. I'm looking at it right now. He's 11 of 25 the last 3 games from 3-point range. So if you add a third scorer, a consistent third scorer, that makes, you know, that just makes him more dangerous. The Sunmu and Coburn are elite players. And if you can add a third one to the mix, that's another reason why I'm so high on Illinois possibly playing deep into March, because they've got some really elite talent. And now if their complementary players can kick it up a notch, it is really tough to beat.
Yeah. And it's kind of a formula that you see every March. Teams that have a good point guard teams that have a good big man, that they seem to advance, right? That's going to get you further into the tournament. And when you've got both of them and the playing that they are this year, it's tough. And I think, I don't know, like, I think Coach of the Year in the Big Ten this year is going to be tough. I think, obviously, whoever wins it is going to have a very strong case because of just how good this league was this year. Juwan Howard up in Michigan, even with the situation they've got going on with COVID throughout the university, I think he's got a strong case. But Brad Underwood's right there to me. I think that they've had the talent, but when you have guys that are kind of stepping up on the periphery of that talent, I think that's about coaching and getting those guys in good spots. And I think it was, and I remember this because it was only a few years ago, but I think it was a little bit underrated, him coming into this league and what he was going to turn Illinois into, or at least get them back to where they were a consistent contender.
Yeah, it was an interesting hire because it didn't fit the Big Ten model per se. And like, he was a guy that didn't have a lot of Big Ten pedigree, but he just ran things a little different. You know, they were very aggressive defensively. I mean, they were like a lot like Penn State, where they were very reachy and grabby and pressure. And he's walked that back. He completely changed his philosophy because he saw that it didn't work in Big Ten play over the course of a 20 game season. To his credit, you know, he adjusted and they've been better defensively since that point. I think the thing that makes them dangerous, even more dangerous this year, is 3-point shooting. They were dead last in the Big Ten last year. They shot around 30% from beyond the arc. Now they're, I think, top 10 nationally. They're around 39 or 40%. And part of it was they brought in some guys that they thought would help them shoot the ball better. Adam Miller is a really highly rated freshman who they said, you know, get this kid in the lineup. He's going to help spread the floor. And he has to some degree. I think he's at like 34%. But guys like Frazier and Dosunmu are shooting way better. Damani Williams, who is he's basically a sixth man now. He started for most of the season. He's shooting like 59% from 3-point range. The volume's not there, but he's a guy that you just can't leave open anymore because he's going to burn you. So like I said, now they're able to knock down outside shots, and it makes it really tough on a defense because now you're spreading the floor and Dosunmu has driving lanes. Colburn, you have to deal with. It's a nightmare. And I think the scary part is, I think Illinois is starting to figure it out now. They struggle a little bit early trying to find themselves. I think they've kind of found an identity and they're, you know, they're going to be tough down the stretch.
Yeah. I think Illinois kind of got some Wisconsin last year vibes where they are figuring it out at the right time and they're going to start peaking here in this last month or so. So that's getting back to the Badgers kind of playing them starting on Saturday. I think that's, if they're able to pick up one win against this Illinois team, more likely you're going to be at the Kohl Center than on Saturday at Illinois. But if they can get one win over them, that's gigantic because this, I as we're talking about, Illinois is playing really well. Colburn is probably my favorite player to watch in the Big Ten that's on Wisconsin's roster. I'm partial to big dudes, number one, but then just the athleticism, the way that he attacks the rim. And I love how he plays defense because he is not afraid to give somebody a hard foul. Also a big fan of that. So I just think that this Illinois team's got a lot of things going for it right now. And it's going to be a really tough challenge, both of those games against Wisconsin. But if Wisconsin could pick up one of those wins, that's just a huge feather in your cap going into tournament time, knowing like, hey, we can hang with these guys when we play the right way.
I agree. Speaking of big dudes, have you watched Purdue play at all this year?
Very little. I watched the last few minutes yesterday when they lost to Maryland.
But they've got a freshman who's 7'4" and is just a monster. He moves well, especially for a 7'4" guy. But he's just so big. I was watching a little bit last night again, and he's hard to deal with. They're playing Maryland, and Maryland, of course, has this small lineup, right? So I think it was Wiggins or Morsell. Somebody was just working so hard to keep the ball out of his hands that it's almost impossible because the guy.
Yeah, it reaches up and he's at 10 feet.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy, man. All right. So that's going to wrap it up for basketball. Make sure you're following Jim on Twitter, Jim Polzine, WSJ. And on Madison.com, lots of stuff coming throughout the weekend, next couple of days, with this big Illinois matchup coming up. So make sure you're on top of that stuff, getting everything that Jim's covering, because it's really top-notch stuff with this basketball team that's in a tough year. As we've talked about before, it's tough to get all the normal stuff this year, but Jim's giving you a lot of good information on Madison.com and on Twitter. So make sure you're following along there. But Jim, let's jump over to football here, because it's been a weird week for the Badgers in that it's kind of become normal, commonplace that Jim Leonard gets thrown into the mix for more often coaching or college coaching jobs. But now we got reported this week and got confirmed by our colleague Jason Wilde that Jim Leonard is going to be interviewing with the Packers for their defensive coordinator job. I started thinking about it yesterday as that news started to break, is that what that fit is for Jim Leonard. And we talked about on the podcast, I think a couple of months ago, that I've always been of the mind that if Jim Leonard leaves Wisconsin, it's going to be for the NFL. I didn't see him wanting to coach against Wisconsin or recruit against Wisconsin in the college ranks. But I think this is the perfect foray for him to the NFL if that opportunity comes up, because you look at this Packers defense and they've got a couple of holes. They got to shore some things up on the back end, especially outside of Jair Alexander and the safety play. But I just think that what Jim Leonard does in the front seven matches up with their talent so well. If the opportunity is there, I can't imagine Jim Leonard saying no, or not feeling like the right fit, just because I think the matchup there is so unique in that it's a apples to apples thing for him.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be going from one dream job to another dream job. I mean, who gets to do that, right? I think somebody asked me on Twitter if it was a good fit. I just think his personality is a good fit for college, for pro. Some guys can't, you know, some guys are better one way and not the other. I think he is a good fit either way. He's a really respected player in the NFL. You know, a lot of guys really respect him. His coaches respected him for what he did, just in terms of getting the defense in order from that safety position. He knows the game. I think he knows how to explain and coach the game. So yeah, I think it would be a really good hire. I think he'd do a good job.
Yeah, I got asked about that too, just how he would kind of translate to the pros. And it's one, the 10 years as a player in the league, I mean, that's going to hold respect with any guy that's played like that. That's kind of a thing that transfers over anywhere. But I think the fact that he played a position that's dominated by high-level athletes while not being that level, you know, like to not having some of those physical capabilities, but still grinding out a career and a good career, you know, I just think that that's going to hold immediate respect in an NFL locker room. But I think the thing that's going to endear him more to players as a coach now is we've heard Wisconsin players talk about the way that he watches film, the little edges that he finds, the little kind of things to focus on, that type of stuff. As a pro, a coach giving you maybe that's just one little edge that gives you a win either in one rep or throughout a game, gives you something to look at and knows that it's going to set you up to make a play at some point. That's really where you separate yourself and endear yourself to your players. And the one thing that you can't question is that Jim Leonard's going to work a crazy amount to be good at what he's doing. I mean, he's done that throughout his entire life. So any type of difference that there would be in that aspect, he'd be able to make up with work going to the NFL. So I think if that opportunity comes up and the Packers offer that job, I think there's a solid chance he goes.
Yeah, I would agree, which would be a huge loss for UW. I mean, like, I know we talked about that for a lot of reasons, right? I mean, it's the timing of it, you know, it's February and you're trying to replace a guy that has been great. I think that's part of this. And also it's going to, the makeup of that defensive staff means you got to fill his spot. He did so much, right? He wasn't just the coordinator. He was also the secondary coach. So you almost have to hire a coordinator with secondary experience, right? Unless you're promoting from within, which I don't know. Like, I don't know what candidate. I don't think there's any candidates, right?
Yeah, on the staff right now, I don't see, because not that Paul Chryst isn't involved with the defense, but at Wisconsin under Chris, it really has been the defensive coordinator runs the defense, not with autonomy, but with a lot of say. You know, it's kind of theirs while Chris thinks whole team and more offensive side. I don't see anybody on the staff right now that would be an immediate fill there. Maybe for that safety position. I'm not sure about how the GAs and the assistants on that side of the ball kind of parse out. But I just – the bigger thing to me, that the on-field coaching has been stellar, obviously. You just look at the results. But his impact on recruiting, and you hear what some of these recruits have been saying about him – just him coming to their high school, being a 10-year NFL veteran and the actual defensive coordinator, him being willing to get on the road like that and, you know, bring guys to Wisconsin, I think that's going to be the loss that you feel even more, because you look at the defensive talent they brought in the last 3 or 4 years, how much of that can be attributed to the fact that Jim Leonard is the defensive coordinator? If that falls off, then you take a huge hit on the recruiting momentum that you've built right now.
Yeah, I mean, I will give Paul Chris credit in that he's had to do this before.
Sure.
You know, Aranda was – we were saying a lot the same things about Aranda. And then he replaced him with Justin Wilcox, who did a good job, Wilcox to Leonard. So he's done a pretty good job hiring defensive coordinators. And I think there will be no shortage of guys that are interested. I just, you know, it's big shoes to fill. And, you know, we've kind of gone over why this would not be an easy guy to replace.
Yeah. And it's funny because the NFL interest has been there in the past. Like the fact that Sean McVay was really interested in Jim Leonard for the Rams defensive coordinator job back in January of 2020, it has, you know, obviously resurfaced with this news. And I think, just personality-wise and fit-wise, for a Jim Leonard going to Green Bay would just work out exactly how he wanted to, right? He loves living in Wisconsin. He loves being in the area and everything like that. It's not that all that far away from Madison. I just think that this is a rare chance to stay in your home state, stay in the type of living that you want for your family and everything, while also being an NFL defensive coordinator.
Yeah, we said all along it's going to take something special to get him to leave, and this certainly – would qualify as special.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I mentioned the recruiting aspect of Leonard, so we're just going to set the Jim Leonard stuff to the side. We're going to assume that he's the defensive coordinator until he's not. Talk a little bit about National Signing Day. It's going to be a quiet day. I mean, as I'm sitting here about 10:45, nothing really has happened for the Badgers. Just to illustrate that point, there's no mention of signing day on Wisconsin's football website right now. So you can tell that they're not anticipating too much happening. So if you want to hear about the 2021 class, go back into the podcast archives and listen to our breakdown back in the December signing day. But Jim, I wanted your opinion on this, because as I look at it, we've talked many times about how this is going to be a historic class for the program, the highest rated class that's ever brought in, probably going to be its first top 20 class ever. Do you think that this class could be the base of a Big Ten championship team in the next 3 years?
I think it could be, and in part because of what's gone on around them. I think the previous classes are really solid. I think there's some really good young talent in this program. And, you know, it's obviously it starts at quarterback. I think Graham Mertz is a really good building block at quarterback. I think they're adding the parts around him, and you look at this class and there's a lot to be excited about. Now you got to keep stacking, right? I mean, you got to add the next couple classes. So you're constantly getting guys in that can help immediately, but across the board, there's just a lot to like in this class. And, you know, I always, maybe it's because I've been around this program for 20, 25 years now, I always look at the big bodies first. And as long as the offensive line position is in good shape, I think that gives this program a chance. And that's what stands out to me about this class, is that there's a lot of good offensive linemen. And I think that future is bright in terms of who they brought in lately. I think that position is in really good shape going forward.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the kind of star there is Nolan Rucci, but I do believe JP Benchwall is going to be another really impressive guard for this program. Like, I know he's brought in as a tackle, but I think his future is a guard. I think kicking him inside is going to make him just a road grader, moving guys off the ball. And then I think Riley Mullman, once he gets to, you know, offensive tackle weight and strength here at the college level. It's going to be really interesting because he's so athletic that I believe he was close to being an all-state basketball player in Minnesota. I have to double check that, but really good basketball player. And then basically played tackle slash tight end for his high school team until he kind of committed to offensive line going into his college recruiting and everything. So I just think that there's kind of the perfect mold that you want. You just need to add some weight and some strength there to make him a tackle. But I just think that he's going to be a very intriguing guy going forward. And as we see the Big Ten continue to add more speed on the edges and the outside rushers coming from corners and linebackers and stuff like that more often here in this league, I think having a guy like that that's got that natural athleticism is going to be even more important going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I was talking – when I did that story on Tyler Wall, I was talking to somebody who knew Riley Mullman because it's the same – they're from the same hometown, same high school, yeah. I think.
Lakeland.
Yeah, very high on him. I mean, it's his work ethic is great, and they think he's going to be a monster down here. They think it's – they thought it was a great fit. This program especially was a great fit for him and vice versa.
No, that makes sense. Kind of on the recruiting front, but more on the transfer market right now, Wisconsin is – really kind of pushing for a veteran running back. We've seen the last few weeks here. Unfortunately, they've gone 0-2 with the targets that they've had. Marquis Stepp, the USC transfer, is going to Nebraska. And then Habibi Liko from Oregon announced that he was going to be going to Boise State. Wisconsin was in on both of those guys. I think this is kind of a tough ask because you're asking somebody that's transferring one from one place, presumably because they're not playing or not getting the opportunity they want, to come to Wisconsin and more than likely be the number two behind Jalen Berger. But I've got to say, if you're somebody that's later in your career and just kind of looking for an opportunity to play a role and more than likely, I mean, be on a successful team, I think this should be an attractive place for a running back to want to come. And you know, you're one twisted ankle away from being a starter.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I mean, that position especially, right? I mean, that the chances of Jalen Berger making it through a full season, you know, healthy, just you don't see that a ton with running backs. So, yeah, if you're the next guy up, you're going to get carries no matter what. And then there's the potential to be the number one guy in within a snap. So it's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was more surprised about Stepp because he, based on social media, he seemed very interested in interacting with the guys that are already going here. So I kind of thought he'd end up here, but you know, Nebraska does have the opportunity for more immediate playing time. I get that. And, you know, they are going to run the ball too. So not a terrible decision for him, but I was surprised by it.
Yeah. One other position that I think that they've got to look into, there's not as many of them, available too often, but defensive end. I think you know you've got Matt Henningsen, and then you've got these younger defensive ends like James Thompson that came in last season that got some run. Thompson ended up getting hurt, but I know they have a lot of faith in those guys developing everything, but I just think that with how good this defense looks like it's going to be with the returners and with the momentum that they've got going, just solidifying that front three with Benton and the Henningsen and then a possible transfer would be really advantageous. But again, I understand that that's a difficult ask because there's just not that many of them out there floating around in the transfer portal.
Yeah. And you can survive a little bit at the position because they play so many, you know, they play a lot of 2-4-5. It's almost become their base in a lot of ways, but you just don't want to flirt with getting low on numbers at that spot, right? Because that then all of a sudden it can get ugly in a hurry. So you would like to see if you don't add any bodies there this off season, you're really hoping some of those young guys develop and quickly. And we just don't know a lot about them, right? And we don't know. And we don't know, again, like we it seems like we say this every week, but we don't know what the off season is going to look like. You know, what's spring practice going to look like? What's the weight program going to look like? It's going to be another weird off season.
Yeah, for sure. And then one last note, I thought that was kind of interesting. The quarterback coach job has not been posted yet. We talked about on last week's podcast that John Budmeyer was heading to Colorado State to be an offensive coordinator. Not up on UW-Madison's website right now. Maybe they're promoting from within or something like that. I'm poking around on that right now. But just kind of interesting that that job's not up, seeing as that news kind of broke early last week.
Yeah, I thought that was surprising too. I mean, there's no chance that Crist would kind of just take over the reins in that position, which would allow him to hire another defensive coach, where you're not, you know, you're hiring a secondary coach, but then a defensive coordinator to kind of oversee the defense and not necessarily coach positions and kind of balance those numbers out a little bit. I don't know. I mean, that's just only because you usually see these jobs posted pretty quickly after someone leaves.
Right. I wouldn't say anything's off the table, especially with the number and hiring crunch that UW is in right now. And by number, I mean money. I just wonder if you could adequately coach the QBs while also being the head coach. And I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting theory. And as I'm thinking about it more, I mean, he was a quarterback coach when he was the offensive coordinator, right? Like he ran that room. Yeah. So he's got that experience. I think that's definitely a possibility. I definitely wouldn't rule that out, especially if he takes back play calling. I can't see him being able to do all three of those things. Obviously, when you're the play caller, you work extremely closely with the quarterbacks and figure out what they like. So that's part of the process. But I just can't imagine that you're doing all three of those things at once, head coach, quarterback, and play calling.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was just something I had thought of as a possibility. It's also possible they know exactly who they want, and there's just no need to you know, post the job at this point. I don't know. Yep. It could be,
as we talked about last week, maybe it's just Scott Tolzien comes back in. There's nothing that they need to really think about. So,
I mean, to me, that makes the most sense, right? I mean, that's the most obvious solution here, but I don't know what Scott wants exactly either.
Right, for sure. All right, so lots of football stuff there. We'll have more coming out through the week. Maybe even a little wrestling, too. I went to a wrestling duel yesterday.
Wow.
I know. Branching out a little bit. We'll see what happens there. But make sure you're on Madison.com, checking out everything. Like I mentioned, lots of basketball, lots of football stuff coming up. Signing day today, like I said, probably won't be too exciting. Nothing really major coming out that way, but just kind of see where the Badgers end up ranking wise after this day is done. Basketball's got a huge matchup with Illinois on Saturday, as we've talked about. So make sure you're checking out Jim on Twitter, Jim Polzin WSJ. You can follow me as well, CBAR WSJ. And next week, hopefully get some more questions in from you guys. Try to answer some more listener questions. People really, really want to know about Ben Carlson. Apparently didn't check out last week's episode. So if we get
it's funny, I forgot we even talked about it, because I remember it coming up in the things we might talk about. And I'm so out of it that I don't even remember addressing it. And then the guy on Twitter basically said exactly what I said. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I did say that. I knew I thought it. I didn't remember saying it. Last week was a haze for me.
For sure. Shout out Steve. Loyal listener, Steve. Appreciate you, man. All right. As we wrap up here, thank you guys so much for listening. That was Jim Polzin. I'm Colton Bartholomew. We'll be back next week.